Dr. Alyssa Watson.
And I'm Dr. Beth Mollison.
Thanks for joining us in the Veterinary Break Room. These are short conversations where Dr. Beth and I chat informally about relevant topics in vet med. And today, since it's the end of the year, we were going to do a little year in review, talk about some things that we learned this year, both in the clinic, you know, professionally and personally, and then maybe look ahead a little bit till next year. I know resolutions can be a little bit of a scary topic for some people, or some people think they're silly, but I kind of like having resolutions, so we thought we might do that today then as well. How are you doing, Dr. Beth?
I'm good. I'm excited for this nice, lighthearted episode
yes.
here.
Yes, Dr. Alyssa. We're sure that everyone is really busy. You know, it's the week, between Christmas and New Year's. And so lots going on. That can be a busy time in the clinic. We all know that, you know, kind of year end can sometimes be a heavy time of year. Sometimes there's increase in euthanasia and things like that. And so today we just wanted to keep it really light.
That's right. So yeah, we say we're going to talk about maybe do a little self-reflection, encourage you all to do the same, but just talk about maybe some of the things that we learned over the last year. We like to think we're ever evolving and learning and becoming better professionals and of course better people. And then we'll maybe touch on some of the things we're looking forward to for next year or at least the metrics that we would like to keep ourselves to for next year. So Dr. Alyssa, when you look back at 2022, what are some things either that stand out or maybe some things that you feel like you've learned yourself?
Yeah, I wrote down a few things. Some of them are just very, very clinical. Some things I didn't know before and I might be really late. You know, I kind of worried about putting these out there and hopefully there's no judgment out there about like, whoa, she didn't know that. I did learn this past year that sildenafil can be used to treat megaesophagus in dogs. So was that something you knew, Dr. Beth?
It was not at the top of my radar for sure. Is it something that somebody told me at one point and I didn't commit to memory? It's definitely possible. So does this mean you had a case that you used it for?
I did have a case that I used it for. So I used it in a puppy. I think it was a Great Dane puppy with a congenital megaesophagus. And we did put in some sildenafil into his treatment plan. And the dog so far is doing well. We also obviously incorporated some other things like feeding upright. Bailey chair for a Great Dane is... Yikes. Always something to see.
Yes, absolutely. Good for you guys.
So another one that I learned, and I think I learned this in a Facebook group, and it isn't one that I have used. So I have not actually done this, but I did learn that some people can and some people do use albuterol inhalers to treat emergency hyperkalemia. So like a blocked cat or something coming in with very high potassium, a little puff of albuterol can help bring that down.
Fascinating.
Right?
Does that mean do you guys keep albuterol in your clinic, I guess is my question.
So yeah, the really good question. No, I would not have had an albuterol inhaler handy. Enough. However, you know, certainly there have been some instances over my 20 years of practice where I have like sent a tech or a nurse or, you know, another trusted staff member over to mm-hmm. a pharmacy to grab something, pick something up,
sure.
You know, regular insulin is one of them. We don't always have in the clinic. And, you know, if you need it for a DKA case or something like that. I have an albuterol inhaler for my son because he gets a little asthma. So run to the house and grab the albuterol
inhaler.
Worst
case scenario. Yeah, we'll keep any of that sort of stuff off the podcast. But yes, you never know.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us something that you learned? Well, I've got a couple more, but I'll let you go.
Okay, I'll interject for a few. I'll toss it back. This is maybe broad, but I feel like this is the first year where I've decided I could mentally take on the idea of learning something brand new about like cancer genomics. So maybe that sounds silly and this is something other vets have been following for years. But I mean, you hear of all those companies out there that offer different testing when it comes to cancers. And I feel like all the companies work a little bit differently. Some of them screen for cancer with blood testing. Some of them do testing on the actual tumor. So you obviously have to diagnose the cancer and be able to get a sample of it to send off for prognostic and treatment options. And that was kind of eye-opening to me. You know, I just feel like we get so busy as vets that usually we don't always have time to take on the learning and the, not just the learning on paper, but the implementation of it in the clinic. You know, like, where do I send these? Mm-hmm. How do I ship them? How do I refrigerate them? Like, who's going to be in charge of this? And this year I decided, you know, it was finally time to figure out what's going on out there. And so for anyone that hasn't kind of looked into that, I would encourage you to do it, because it's certainly something that I think clients are starting to, you know, kind of pick up on as well, that those options are out there.
Well, yeah. And for so long there, you know, it was always kind of a running, not a joke, but like kind of the client asks, well, you know, didn't cancer show up on the blood test? And you have to be like, there is no test for cancer. There is no blood test for cancer. But now, I mean,
a good point.
I'm with you 100%. The term liquid biopsy was not in my vocabulary prior to 2022. So
yes, that is a good way to put it. And then let's see, the other one case wise, I had my first lepto case, which I feel like it's always one of those things where in the moment, like seeing something new and having to do that on the spot, like, all right, I've read about this and on paper, I know what to do, but how do I actually manage this? And actually the one takeaway I was going to share from this was that, you know, when you have a case of lepto, you immediately are like, who is exposed? The humans are going to get it. This is going to be a nightmare. Like, the health department's going to get involved, the whole thing. And I should have gotten more actual statistics, but I learned that it's really not as panic inducing as I thought it needed to be, and that it's fairly uncommon for the humans around the pets to get lepto too. So that was just an interesting case and reassuring. And, you know, I was fortunate that it was a client that had the resources to be testing for lepto and doing all that stuff. Cause when I look back, I'm like, you know, have I seen other cases of lepto? Certainly I've had suspect cases where you treat it as such, you know, in the hospital and decontamination and all of that stuff. But this was the first one that I got to, you know, kind of fully see through.
Yeah. So. Wow. I've never had a case of lepto, so it's not very common here. We did have an outbreak a couple of years ago, pretty close to us in Utah at a boarding facility up there. But I've never diagnosed it. And so kudos to you. That would have been nerve-wracking for me, because like you said, reportable diseases and things like that, I start worrying, are we dotting all our I's and crossing all our T's?
Right. And the other thing I learned, again, it is vulnerable sharing these things we didn't know. Like, does everybody else know this and not us? But I didn't realize that there were a fair number, again, I don't know any percents, but dogs that just carry it and are carriers and don't have any signs or symptoms. And that was a little bit scary, because it's like, you know, does the dog I adopt from the shelter, could they have lepto? So just another little thing to think about that hadn't really crossed my mind much. But Alyssa, you said you had a few more, so let us hear them.
I have a couple more. So I did share with our listeners last week, my win of the week was about my kitty. I had a cat with a linear foreign body. And so I had heard about this trick to do with a red rubber catheter if you have a patient with a linear foreign body. Have you heard of this trick, Dr. Beth?
Not until recently, thanks to our lovely content here at Clinician's Brief. But go ahead. I want you to share it with our audience.
So, yeah. So I had heard about this trick with the red rubber catheter. And I will tell you, in my mind, I wasn't imagining it right. Like, in my mind, I had imagined that you somehow slipped the red rubber catheter like over the linear foreign body, like you threaded the thread through it somehow. And I'm like, that seems like it's very difficult and I don't understand how it would work. And that's because that's not how it's done.
There you have it.
So there. So I totally pulled out YouTube. Another thing I learned is that you can learn anything on YouTube. I mean,
right. No shame in that.
Cherry eye surgery. Red rubber catheter trick, how to change the air filter in the cabin air filter in your car. It's on YouTube, I swear.
That's right.
So what you actually do So this cat had a string form body that went all the way. It was looped around the base of the tongue. We did find it when we were intubating him. So it was looped around the base of the tongue. I was able to, you know, get it from under the tongue, and then I clamped it there in order to keep a hold of that end. I did a gastrotomy and was able to cut it there and find that end. And then you tie that. So you tie that end directly to the red rubber. And then the red rubber catheter, you don't need to use the whole thing. That was another something I was confused about. You just need, you know, kind of a good piece of it. And I used a 5 French because this was a cat, you know, but anything kind of right in there that size. But once you've attached the string to it very well, then you can feed that into the intestines, and then you can feel it there. You know, very similar to anybody out there that's had to restring like the drawstring in your pants or in your hooded sweatshirt. Right. You know, you attach that to a safety pin or something that you can kind of feel as you move it along in there. And it works great, works like a charm, and you can feed that. I fed it all the way through. The string went all the way to the cecum. Like, I was worried I was going to have to feed it out through the colon, but I was able to dislodge it right there before the cecum and take it out. And that was really cool.
For you. That sounds very stressful, but I'm glad you got to, experience the red rubber in person and have a success story from it.
I also learned this year not so life or death as the red rubber catheter trick. And that the first one is cardiac troponin I is actually the letter I. And for a very long time, I thought that that was the Roman numeral 1. So I thought that it was cardiac troponin 1, but it's not. It's cardiac troponin I. There is also, I guess, a cardiac troponin T and some other, again.
There's no shame in these things. I like to think we're just too busy to know all of these things. And yeah, I don't know if I knew that or not. You would have had to have asked me before you told me what the right answer was.
I mean, but I'd never heard it. I've always read it. And so when you're reading it, it's very difficult to distinguish between a capital I and the Roman numeral 1.
Exactly.
So, and then let's see, other fun things that I learned. I learned a lot of facts about octopodes. So way more facts about octopodes than I ever knew were out there. The first of which is
what inspired this learning, dare I ask?
So one of the reasons that inspired this learning was I was looking up some things about octopodes for another podcast with a neurologist, because we were talking about how octopodes have 9 brains. So they have a central brain, but then they also have a little brain in each of their tentacles, so that their tentacles can actually operate independently from their main brain, which is shaped like a donut around their esophagus. Yeah.
I feel like they cover this. What was that movie about the octopus?
Which one?
It was really good documentary. It was documentary about an octopus, and this guy became like best friends with it, and it was sounds like a terrible movie, but it was delightful. It was very popular.
I'm going to have to watch
it. I wish I knew
it.
The name of it. And I wish I remembered if they taught me that and I'd forgotten it. But that's interesting.
Yep, they also have 3 hearts. And so they have 3 hearts, 9 brains. And then obviously the biggest thing that I took away from all of my home research was that there are 3 different accepted plural forms of octopus. So octopuses is actually okay. You can say that.
Okay.
A lot of people say octopi, which you can say, but octopus doesn't come from Latin. It comes from, it's a Greek rooted word. And so the plural in the Greek is octopodes, which is my new favorite word.
And
I
love
to
really
say it.
Octopodes. It's octopodes. Not like octopodes or octopods.
No, it's octopodes. Octopodes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely didn't know that.
You're really excited we
God
had this
I know
conversation
now.
Today.
Yes, I think this is life-changing stuff here, Alyssa. You need to watch that. You need to watch that documentary.
I think I do.
It will add to your octopus knowledge for sure.
And then the last thing that I learned this this past year, which is much more personal, you know, if anybody is, you know, listens to the podcast, they know about my Disney cruise addiction, which I'm working on. but I did learn that if you are in a Facebook group and it is dedicated to Disney Cruise Lines and you happen to refer to the vessel that you're traveling on as a boat and not a ship, then you mm-hmm. should just really be prepared for like an autopsy versus necropsy level backlash, because people have really strong opinions on that.
So ship is like ship. What the hardcore people mm-hmm. say.
Yeah. Don't say boat.
Okay. I will not make that mistake. You've saved us all a world of hurt here. That's fascinating. Oh goodness. Yes. I will share quickly my last two, which one, I feel like maybe I've been learning this for a few years as my dog has gotten older, but one thing I learned or was reiterated to me this year is that treating my own pets is not easy. I used to be very confident about how, yeah, you know, why would I want anybody else treating my pets? And we did do a whole podcast episode on this actually, but I learned that the moment any of my own pets need urgent healthcare, I am not the one to turn to. So fortunately, when you're a vet, you have a lot of vet friends. So I have turned to those vet friends for care of Paul, who is currently doing fine. And then the other one I learned was, again, thanks to Clinicians Brief content. And we did an article about nail polish. I don't know, Alyssa, do you remember in vet school mm-hmm. when they used to tell us like we couldn't wear nail polish? And there was a study done that says that actually doesn't affect anything. At least that's what the most recent study said. So we'll see if it flips in a different direction again at some point. But I thought that was interesting, yeah, too.
It was nice to have permission to go ahead and polish, you know.
that's right. And then speaking of our, you know, CB Clinicians Brief mm-hmm. content here, I wanted to reflect for a minute on like our favorite, of course, where some of the podcasts or two of the podcasters here. I just wanted to bring up a few of our favorite podcast episodes. So Alyssa, what were your favorites either here in the break room or you do our main podcast line here with some of the authors of our articles? So what were your favorite conversations this year?
So I had amazing conversations. Several of them, of my favorite ones, are just convos that you and I have had in the break room, because we've covered some really weighty topics, you know, mm-hmm. everything from mid-level, you know, should veterinary medicine have a mid-level position similar to a PA? We have talked about, you know, we've talked about in-home euthanasia. We have talked about so many wonderful topics. And one of my favorites was the first time that we had a guest on the podcast, and we had Dr. Chloe. She yes. is a pharmacist. I learned so much that episode. And I know that you had kind of earmarked that as one of your favorites as well. Did you have any other favorites mm-hmm. of our conversations?
Yes, I liked that one. I liked just because I felt like Chloe was a wealth of knowledge. So if anyone hasn't listened to that mm-hmm. one, it was actually, you know, a lot of times we just like share our own opinions that people may or may not care about. But that one I thought provided a lot of good practical information for people in dealing with your local pharmacist. So I highly recommend that one. I liked our anytime we've talked about euthanasia, because Dr. Alyssa does a lot of in-home euthanasias. So I thought that was another good one. And then I also do the podcast, our partner podcast, where we work with some of our sponsor companies. And the ones I like there, we worked with Dr. Robin Downing on an episode. The other one that I really found more fascinating than I thought I would was one we did with Zoetis about heartworms, and it was specifically about resistant heartworms, but we did it with a heartworm researcher, Molly Salvadalis. I'm hopefully saying her name correctly today, but it was just fascinating to think about all of these scientists that have like dedicated their careers to heartworm research. I don't know why that was like mind-boggling to me for some reason, but it was just really interesting to see all of the science and research that's put behind, you know, all of the stuff that we do every day and just all these people behind the scenes that make all of it happen. So I like that conversation too. But yeah, lots of fun stuff this year.
I mean, going through when we were talking about doing this episode and when I was looking back at things I learned, I purposefully didn't even include anything from, you know, all of the podcasts that I've done over the year with all of our incredible authors, because I could have, we would have talked for hours and hours and hours. They're just a wealth of information.
Yes,
two of my favorites, sure. Just conversations that stick out incredibly in my mind are guiding pet owners through difficult decisions with Dr. Moses. Mm-hmm. She is a bioethicist at Harvard. She is incredible. That conversation was so enlightening and so inspirational. And then drugs for peri-anesthetic analgesia with Dr. Grubb was another one of my favorites.
She's great.
Oh, she was just fantastic to talk to. Just wonderful. These people are a wealth of information. I feel like every time, you know, I get to do these, I just fangirl over all of these, you know, leaders in our profession. And I feel really lucky to be able to just sit down and talk with them. So.
Yeah, it's a great compliment. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just self-promoting, but it's a good compliment to all the articles that Clinicians Brief puts out to be able to have those conversations where Alyssa asks more personal, you know, like clinically related focused questions that she has. So highly recommend those episodes. I may have to go back and listen to a few myself, Alyssa. But what about, I think instead of one of the week this week, we decided that we're going to talk maybe about some resolutions for 2023. So have you set any, Alyssa? Are you a resolution person?
Yeah, I am.
Or an anti-resolution person?
I am a resolution person. So I do. And I chose two resolutions, one professional and one personal, to highlight. So I would really like to get, you know, my hospice certification this year. So that's my goal. I'm setting that up. We'll see if we get there. I hope so.
Nice. Writing what does that entail? Is it?
So yeah, so I'd have to take, you know, additional classes and write a case report. And so it's a big deal. It's a big undertaking. And then for personal, I really would like to get back a little bit. I don't think I'm going to get back into the gym. So after COVID, I had been a member at, you know, a gym for 20 years and I really loved the gym, and then COVID kind of shut all that down. And I don't know if I'll go back to the gym, but I would just like to get back to spending some significant amount of time exercising, because that has fallen by the wayside.
Yes, I can relate with that one. I was a big Orange Theory. Did you ever do Orange Theory? I was a big Orange Theory person for like 2 years, and then March 2020 is when I did my last class. Mm-hmm. So I, mine should probably echo that and find new ways to move. But no, I like those. I don't have anything as groundbreaking as your hospice certification. That sounds awesome. But mine were just kind of more on the daily resolutions. So one big thing in the clinic is like learning how to do, you know, of course, relying on our technicians is great. And that's actually one of my other resolutions, is to utilize the technicians more to capacity. But I also feel much better when I am able to, you know, like I want to be able to help technicians and help teach them things. So one of my resolutions is to get better at doing dental radiographs. You know, I haven't had dental radiographs my whole career. They're a relatively new thing. And I feel like I don't have the skill set to like really feel confident on how to help facilitate good images. So that's one of mine. And then let's see, personally, oh my gosh, I can't set any, you guys know my Elton, usually I have Elton on my like one of the week, my Elton concerts, and Elton's last concert, US concert, is over. So I guess maybe my personal resolution should be to not spend so much money on concert tickets in 2023. Just in general, taking better care of myself. I actually, I'll bring this up. This week I bought one of those giant lamps there for light therapy. So for people with like seasonal depression, which pretty sure that's me. So I now have this like huge 18-inch lamp that I'm supposed to sit in front of for 30 minutes every morning. And I can report back and let you guys know how it treats me this winter. But that's going to be just my first resolution starting off, is to get my 30 minutes of quiet time in front of my lamp and see if it changes my life or not.
It's really important. You know, I absolutely remember. So I live in Vegas now, so we have a lot of sun. That's kind of why I made that face. I'm like, we have lots of sun. But I...
Yeah, Alyssa cannot relate. I just lost it.
I remember. Awesome. No, I remember. I'm from Iowa. Yeah. And yeah, where it was dark and gloomy for days. And yeah, I think that's a great one.
Thank you. Yeah, it went from like 80 every day here up until November. And then the same weekend the time changed, it went, you know, it's been like snowing twice this week. So for all my fellow sufferers out there, it's been a rough transition. So anyway, but yes, speaking of winter, it has been a wonderful year with you, Dr. Alyssa. Oh. I'm glad we could have this conversation.
I am too. This has been wonderful. You know, I just really enjoy getting to sit down and have these talks with you. And yeah, because Dr. Beth joined the team this year. That's a big one. That's a big yes. thing for the year, reflecting back on the year. And it's great. And I can't wait for next year.
Yes, we will see all of you in the new year.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Veterinary Break Room. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts or drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Veterinary Break Room is a Brief Media production. Produced by Alexis Ussery, with sound by Randall Stupka, and co-hosted by Dr. Alyssa Watson and Dr. Beth Mollison.